friends, Christy Tagey here, your host for the Productive Passions podcast. Let me ask you, is there something different you dream of doing but don't know where to begin? If you're feeling suffocated, anxious, or you feel there's something different calling you, come along with me for candid conversations with people who have embarked on a journey to put their passions to work for them. Buckle up and enjoy the ride. Life is too short to stay stuck. Hi, friends. Are you a social media poster or influencer, a podcaster, writer, producer, or someone who creates content that's shared with the world? If so, listen up. Today, we have Gordon Firemark, aka the podcast lawyer, sharing valuable insights on what is permissible under current law, the importance of permissions, trademarks, navigating the intricacies of music licensing, and of course, avoiding those pesky scams. Trust me, you don't want to miss out on these tips to keep your content and yourself legally protected. Gordon shares the journey that led him to specialize in entertainment law and why he's so passionate about helping content creators navigate the legal maze. So grab your favorite beverage, settle in, and let's dive into the world of legalities with the one and only podcast lawyer, Gordon Firemark. Gordon, you have an interesting job. Would you please share with the listeners, how exactly are you following your passion?
Wow. Well, thanks for having me, Christy. I am, you know, one of my passions is helping other people get their messages out. So I am known as the podcast lawyer, and I help creative people, podcasters, filmmakers, YouTubers, theater producers, and those kinds of folks, just to do their thing, to make their content, their material, to entertain and inform audiences and have an impact that way. And the way I do that is by helping them protect themselves with, you know, legal structures and frameworks and understanding the law so they don't find themselves in hot water.
So how did you get to podcasting? You're an entertainment lawyer. What brought you to the podcasting world?
It was a little bit of scratching my own itch. You know, I was looking for a way to market my entertainment law practice. At the time that I got started, well, I shouldn't say that. I was invited first to be a guest on some podcasts. I was doing a lot of blogging and web email marketing and those kinds of things. And it was a lot of work, you know, turning that crankle every day to make things happen. And I got invited to be a guest on a podcast. And that turned into a regular recurring guest spot on that podcast. It was a show about video wedding photography, actually. And I was answering all kinds of questions about copyrights and trademarks and things in that space. And that evolved from a regular show to becoming our own show called The Law and Video. And then the guy who was hosting that show had to stop. He was moonlighting on his job and his boss didn't like it, so they made him stop. So at this time, I was hooked and I decided to start my own podcast. And as I did, I realized, oh, this is easier than sitting down and writing out a blog post, and I can speak in my own voice and my listeners can hear the smile in my voice and those kinds of things. And that really fosters the know, like, and trust. Well, as I started doing that, I realized, well, okay, this is a kind of entertainment medium, but it's a little different in some ways. And I sat down to look for the law about podcasting, and there wasn't any. So I went out and did the research for myself, scratching my own itch. And that turned into a book that I published called The Podcast Blog and New Media Producers Legal Survival Guide. And that was 13, 14 years ago now. So
what is the biggest mistake we podcasters make? Because it's relatively easy to start recording and publishing, but there's a bit of homework that we should be doing, correct?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think getting set up right. I would say the biggest mistake that creators of all kinds, not just podcasters, make is not taking it seriously as a profession and being businesslike about things, even when it feels like a hobby. You know, when we're starting out in something and sort of feeling our way, it always feels like a hobby. But if you're serious about it, you have to take the business side of it seriously as well and be a professional. podcasters are great about professional quality sound. Everybody invests in microphones and technology and things like that. They're great about putting together good content, professional level content. What they're not so good at is the back office, setting up the company, thinking of it as a company, first off, setting up the company, protecting their intellectual property, respecting other people's intellectual property, brand name for the show, you know, those kinds of things. And then, of course, the relationships with their team and with their customers and clients, all of those things. If you approach things professionally, that's the fast track to success.
So I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Yeah.
How am I doing so far?
How are you doing so far?
Yeah, like with the name and any advice that you have for me. And I know it's really early on in the conversation, but yeah. I'm absolutely interested.
Okay. Well, we haven't talked about your business structure. Are you an LLC or a corporation, or are you just Christy out there doing it?
I am an LLC. Yes.
Okay. Good. I was going to say the word naked. I don't know if that's okay, but a lot of creators.
That's great. You know what? Especially with a name like Productive Passions, it just kind of goes with it.
You know, it's funny. I had an ad campaign that I was running on social media that asked, you know, it was a picture of a guy from here up, and it was, "Are you podcasting naked?" You know, without protection, and it got taken down on the social media. They thought I was promoting porn or something.
Oh, I love that. Well, no, I mean, how smart is that? You're going to get somebody's attention. Like,
right.
Are you protected? No, I love that. What else should we be doing to protect ourselves?
Well, if you have a title for your podcast that is very distinctive and really sets you apart and identifies you as the source of the show, you don't want some other show coming along with a title that's confusing and that makes people think, oh, maybe this is coming from Christy, or maybe this is related to that other show. So I am a strong advocate for trademark protection. Mm. And that is, a trademark is a distinctive word or symbol or phrase that is used to identify goods and services by their source in commerce. So registering a federal U.S. trademark is a great start. And in the countries where you have lots of listeners is a good idea. And then you have to defend it. You have to be vigilant about making sure that the confusing ones get notified right away and told to stop, that kind of thing.
So just writing TM after my name isn't enough to trademark.
So that's the TM is an indicator that there's a claim for trademark rights, that usually common law trademark rights. The symbol, the R in a circle, is the symbol for a registered trademark. And that is the better, stronger, more powerful, more potent kind of protection, because it's not bound geographically and it's not limited. It's not as limited, let's put it that way. So there is some protection just by adopting and using the name. And that little TM sort of tells the world, hey, I claim this as mine. And you'll see right now the podcast lawyer, I have a TM after it.
Right.
The reason I do that is because it's a little bit of a descriptive term. Now, I've been using it for a long time. And, you know, so I remember I said it has to be a distinctive term in order to be registered as a trademark. Well, descriptive is the other end of a spectrum, right? Or partway across the spectrum. So what I'm doing is acquiring distinctiveness by being out there, being visible, saying, hey, this is my brand. And over time, 5 years or so, which I think I'm coming up on, the brand will have acquired enough distinctiveness to justify registering a trademark.
Okay. So do you need to wait 5 years?
If you've chosen something that's descriptive. Now, your title is not descriptive. It's a very, it's evocative, I guess you could say, of what your show is about and who you're talking to. But it doesn't tell people like this is a do as I say, not as I do situation. One of my podcasts is called Entertainment Law Update. That tells you exactly what you're getting when you tune in.
Yep.
Productive Passions podcast can go in 1,000 different directions.
It could. Yep.
And to that extent, it's sort of fanciful and I would say distinctive. So I think it is registrable. And Entertainment Law Update is another one where after 15 years doing it, where we have federal trademark protection, but that's by acquired distinctiveness, not inherent distinctiveness.
Okay. So, but getting back to who you are and how you got here, I'm very curious, what did you want to be when you were 10 years old?
You know, I had to think about this. You warned me that question was coming, and I had to think about it a little bit because I don't remember having burning desire to be anything in particular as a kid. I mean, I sort of thought, oh, maybe a fireman, maybe an astronaut, but none of it was like, this is what I got to do. I certainly never thought I wanted to be a lawyer. I think I remember playing in my room and I had this cassette tape thing that I had made a sound that sounded a little like helicopter blades whirring. And I remember pretending to be a helicopter pilot. So maybe that's what I wanted to be.
You were being creative back then, right? So. You didn't know it, but back then you were being creative. And
actually, now that I think of it, yeah, I was tinkering with sound equipment as early as 8 or 9 years old. Yeah, tape recorders and things like that. So,
how would you describe yourself?
I would describe myself as, first and foremost, a devoted family man. I have a wife and 3 kids and a house full of pets, and I just love that.
Pretty amazing for a man with a wife and 3 kids and a house full of pets. And there's like, your background is quiet and peaceful. How did you manage that?
Well, most of them are at school.
Oh, okay.
First and foremost, I think a family man. But I also think I know I'm very smart. I don't mean to brag and sound conceited about it, but I'm devoted to applying my natural talents and skills to helping other people. And I'm very proud that I can say that. And what else? Driven, supportive, extroverted, introvert. I think that's probably the best way I could describe myself. Yeah, thanks.
I understand that, the extroverted introvert. For you, what does that mean? How are you, when are you extroverted and when are you more introverted?
I like being around other people, but not in giant doses. I get tired and exhausted with it fairly easily. I need my quiet reflection time. But if I don't get around people enough, I've had COVID this week. I've been quarantined for over a week now since I came home from a conference. And I'm going stir crazy. I need human contact with people from outside. So that's the extroversion. And I think this serves me well in business. I'm going out and meeting people and hustling business, as they say. But when it really comes down to it, I want to sit down at my desk and work quietly and focus.
So it sounds like you get your energy from other people, but to be in big groups for a long period of time may be uncomfortable.
Yeah. And I've gotten better at that, the big groups thing. But I do sometimes just need to pull back and recede and go find a quiet corner somewhere. Yeah. But they charge up the battery that I then tap into to use for the focused detail work that I need to do, the deep work, as they say.
That makes sense. And I don't think that's so unique. I find talking with people who are extroverts that they really do feel like they're introverts. And I would also identify with that. In a big group of people, I'm not as comfortable as I am. Like right now, talking one-on-one, I'm extremely curious about people, really love meeting people. But in a group, it just feels overwhelming. So I'm curious, are there any tactics or anything that you use to sort of make yourself feel more comfortable in those situations?
Well, I do sometimes let my eyes glaze over, or like I said, find a quiet corner somewhere and just sort of be in the moment, trying to tune everything out, take a few breaths and calm myself. Often sort of asking myself, okay, what should I do next? What am I here for? Remind myself of my purpose, of putting myself in the situation. And then that sort of gets me back on track and I'm able to do my thing. I mean, I'm always able to smile and shake a hand and have a conversation. Sometimes it feels sort of superfluous and frivolous and kind of a, why am I here? And that's when I need to go and do that little meditation. Just 5 or 10 or 15 seconds is usually enough to sort of get me back on track.
I'm wondering, is there a mantra that you follow or that you bring to mind, not just in those instances?
Interesting question. I think one thing that I do find myself saying in my head is, isn't this great? This feels wonderful. And being in gratitude, this is wonderful. And thank you. I'm grateful for the moment that I'm in. I'm grateful for the experiences I'm having. I think that's the most powerful thing, gratitude. And the other mantra that I use when things just get really tough is an old saying. I can't remember who it's attributed to, but you know what? When you're going through hell, keep going. Don't stop. Yeah. Otherwise, you're just stuck in a pit of despair, right? So, yeah, keep moving. Keep moving. It's going through hell, not going into.
That's so, right.
Right.
You know, what's interesting, Gordon, is the people I've spoken with, and I've spoken with quite a few people now, mm-hmm. who have followed their passion. It's not always an easy road. In fact, usually starting out, especially, it's not an easy road. But the one thing everyone has in common to this point is gratitude. Everyone has talked about gratitude.
Oh, that's
interesting. Does that surprise you?
A little bit. Maybe that's part of just a self-selecting who you're talking to. Maybe it's something to do with the nature of the kind. Well, look, in the show title, Productive Passions, these are people who have passion. That's right. Something people feel gratitude about. I'll tell you, you know, there was a time in my life after I'd started my law practice and I wasn't really making the kind of progress I wanted, where I was really disconnected from the things I feel passionate about. And I spent some time in therapy and I ended up actually reconnecting with the theater, which was one of my earliest passions. And that's when I started to be able to feel grateful again. So I think passion and gratitude are deeply connected concepts.
And it feels to me that gratitude also is connected to perspective.
Sure.
Sure. When things seem to be, excuse the phrase, but when the shit hits the fan, sometimes it's a good way to be reminded of what is going well or what could actually be worse. Gratitude's a great way to have a bit of perspective. Not that you can't take a moment and give yourself grace to get through a tough period, mm-hmm. but then having the gratitude to sort of recognize that probably the situation we're in may not be as dire as it feels in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you can say to yourself, okay, this sucks, acknowledge it.
Yep.
Okay. What am I supposed to learn from this? Whatever that is. And then being grateful for the lesson. Turns it all around. Yeah, it's a crappy situation, but there's a lesson for me and I can be grateful for the lesson even though I had to go through something and was uncomfortable to get there.
So the other thing that happens during these conversations that I have with people is at every conversation, there's a point where I want to hit rewind and make that point again. And you just said it, and maybe there'll be more, but to look at what is the lesson that I meant to get from this. Through hard things, right, is typically where that's a pivotal moment. My husband laughs at me because I call them my personal propellants. Those really hard times that I look back and I think, oh my gosh, how did I get through that? Or in the moment, it felt so terrible. Those were also periods of time that were pivotal in my life that mm-hmm. I went in a different direction or decided to approach something differently. So I love that you talk about looking for the lessons in the hard times.
Sometimes the universe's only way of getting our attention is to smack us upside the head.
I like how you said it better. I like that. Next time I'm feeling like things are really tough, I'm going to think about it that way. And I bet it'll bring a smile to my face. Maybe, maybe afterwards, but man, I really like that, Gordon.
I'm happy I came up with it.
You might want to trademark that. No, that's fantastic. So what is a little known fact about you? What would your family or friends be surprised to learn about you?
I don't know if they'd be surprised to learn about it, but something that I don't think I share very much is that I am really deeply insecure about, have I accomplished what I'm here to do on this planet? Or so far, have I accomplished how I should be? Am I on track? Those kinds of things. Because for all the successes and awards and degrees and clients that are grateful and all those kinds of things, not a day goes by where I don't think, God, I could do so much better. But maybe that's maybe that's where the drive comes from. So I'll be grateful for that tendency to go there.
Right.
And it's the kind of thing where I can sort of look at it and go, okay, I can count some blessings here and move past it. But it's there. And there, you know, I do experience that. So I think that might surprise some of the people close to me because, you know, I don't want to show them that. That breeds a kind of worry and concern, maybe. And I like to sing. That's another one.
Oh, I like that.
My immediate family knows it because they're always telling me to stop.
Wait, are you good at singing?
I think I have a decent voice. I've been told I have a decent voice. The kids don't want to hear it. My wife doesn't. Well, if I do it too much, I think she minds. But I mean, I sang to her at our wedding and that was a big surprise.
Oh,
and I
sang
"It Had to Be You." And
my goodness.
And it helps that my best friend was the band leader for the wedding. But yeah, the kids don't want to hear it. And so I don't. I don't get up in public and sing.
Can I ask you if you ever karaoke?
No. And in fact, I avoid karaoke because I don't like listening to other people who aren't very good sing. Call me a snob.
Fair enough. Well, I do appreciate you sharing what you said about being insecure, because I think that's something that is also can be universal. Especially, it's surprising to hear from somebody like yourself who always sounds maybe not authoritarian, that's not the right word, but very confident, very assured of yourself. I mean, even your voice projects that. But I think that's important for people to know that behind this very confident human being, there are some insecurities. And I think the reason that that's important is sometimes when I feel secure, it makes me feel like I'm not good enough. And I know that I am. I know that the way we continue to get better is to work on whatever it is that we want to work on. But interestingly, you talked about insecurities through, and I don't know if I'm going to do this justice, but maybe in discernment, right? And discernment, like what to be doing this? Where else am I supposed to take that? Is that an accurate or fair statement?
Yeah. Maybe not where else, but what more, I guess is
what more.
I'm not enough. Like I'm not doing enough, creating enough, helping enough, being enough. And I gotta say, it's very uncomfortable even saying this into a microphone on a recording. But I'm gonna go for it. So yeah, I think everybody has these kinds of doubts about themselves. And there have been really deep despair moments in my life where those doubts were sort of in charge.
Yeah.
And the one thing I'll say is I got help. I went and I started seeing a therapist and I got some help. And I think that experience, actually went through that a couple of times when, you know, close people to me died. And then I was going through this sort of crisis of conscience and confidence. And I think that experience has made me much more able to find gratitude and find the passion and be okay with connecting with something I'm passionate about, even if it isn't necessarily taking me down a path toward success, whatever that means. The example, when I was in that deep despair, I told my law partners that I was going to be taking afternoons and evenings off, and I was going to go work at the theater where I had started as a kid. And I reconnected with my passion for the arts, the theater. Even though I was working as a lawyer, helping people in film and television, it wasn't satisfying in the way that I needed it to be. It didn't give me the outlet. So I was a sound technician at this community theater, and my good friend who ran the place, or ran the technical side, was kind enough to bring me back on and hire me for the evenings and weekends shifts. And it was great. It was great. And, you know, that went on for a few years and I sort of found ways to channel things and help. It turns out it was the people that I was really most drawn to.
Sure.
Helping being in that creative environment with creative people. And I'm proud to say that now that I'm able to select my clients and help the kinds of people I just really care about and want to help.
You know, that's another, I would say, refrain that I hear on the podcast is people that are willing to get help, you know, and talk about it. Because in the past, I think we're of a similar generation. That was something you didn't talk about. You certainly didn't admit it. And in fact, you probably didn't even go get help for it because you didn't want that documented anywhere. And when I'm talking to people who did go get help, they talk about how much it helped, that it wasn't a magic wand. It didn't make everything go away, but it provided the tools to get through a period of time. It provided perspective, whatever it provided, it helped that person to move on. And I think that's an important thing for people to hear too, is it's not, following your passion isn't perfection. You're not guaranteed that it's going to be smooth, that's going to be perfect. Right. But when you do follow things that you're passionate about, I heard the excitement in your voice when you were talking about going to the theater.
Yeah.
And not only did that help sort of refresh you, but my gosh, that's exactly what you do, right? So it seems like you've been in this entertainment world for a long time. You've been following your passion, maybe not even identifying it as doing that for quite a while.
Yeah. I think I checked it at the door for a while, and that's what led me to fall into that despairing place. But yeah, I got excited about theater when I was 5 years old. And drawn into it as a viewer, as a audience member. And that led me in junior, you know, years later in junior high school to be excited when the principal of the school asked me to run the lights and sound for a variety show. And that led me to be the AV geek in high school and run the lights and sound in the school. And then that got me the job at that community theater. And it was only in college when I shifted into radio, TV, and film that I wouldn't say I turned away from theater, but I shifted focus. And then the idea of law school came along, and you know, that was more, I think my parents were really worried because they nagged isn't the right word, but they let me know that, hey, are you really sure this theater thing, this entertainment thing is the right way to make a living? Da, da, da. And I got some proof when the writers went on strike 1 year while I was just out of college. And so I went to law school. And I think that, not that I regret going to law school, because it's given me the tools that I'm able to use to serve people in a higher way now. But I think it really took me kind of off track for a while. And coming back to theater was reconnecting with that passion. So,
well, it's really interesting that sort of everything you've done has led you back to what you really enjoyed, even going to law school, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you're practicing now is all around what you found joy in since you were 5 years old. Those are important things to pay attention to. Again, as I talk to people, it's sort of this coming around where there may have been, for lack of a better term, signs along the way.
Sure.
But it wasn't until later that it's like, oh, gosh, yeah, I kind of have been preparing for this for all my life. Or, you know, some of these things that I was interested in really helped to develop who I am now. So it's really interesting to hear how, you know, you're a lawyer, but you're doing what you've been wanting to do, or you're staying involved in what you've been enjoying, find enjoyment in since you were young.
Yeah, you know, and it's interesting. I, as you were talking, I was thinking, yeah, I've always been sort of been that behind the scenes guy, the lighting and sound, the stage management, that kind of stuff. And as a lawyer, obviously, I'm not the one in the spotlight most of the time. Although here I am sitting, I've got lights and cameras and sound, and you know, and I have my own podcast.
Front and so center.
There's a part of me that kind of likes the spotlight, as long as I don't have to sing in public. I do kind of enjoy it, especially when what I'm showing off is my talent, which is the thinking on my feet and being able to advise and bring to bear some knowledge and wisdom and experience that a lot of creative people can't tap into for themselves.
Almost that repeated refrain of, I'm good at this. Is it any surprise that what I'm good at is what I'm passionate about?
I think that's very true. I think when you really know your topic, it's very comfortable and easy to speak about it, like, you know, just off the cuff, right? Because it's so ingrained in who we are. But that said, I don't want people to think that if you're not good at it, it's not really your passion. Because you can be passionate about playing guitar or singing or mountain climbing, but not be really adept or really great at it. And maybe not, maybe even have some handicaps that prevent you from being really great at it, but you can still have a passion and share
right.
the joy of whatever your journey into it is. Right. So I think that's really important to remember.
I think that's a really good point that you could be participating in things that you're really excited about. It doesn't have to be a career.
Yeah.
And the people I talk to, it doesn't necessarily mean that their passion is their career choice. It might be right. the hobby, or it might be a charity they started because mm-hmm. they feel very passionate about this cause or this open need. So it's not necessarily where they get their paycheck. But being involved is sort of what feeds that and makes them feel good.
It could even be being a caregiver to a loved one or...
That's exactly right.
Just a part of your community or whatever. You know, there's plenty of people who go play tennis every day because they love it. They're never going to be a pro tennis player.
That's right. That's right.
And they know it.
And that's part of what brings quality. Having quality of life mm-hmm. is being involved in things you care about. I want to ask you, I'm going to change directions a little bit and ask you, what's the funniest or maybe the most uncomfortable thing that's ever happened to you live? And how did you deal with it?
Funniest, most uncomfortable thing that's ever happened. Boy, that's a hard one. I've probably blocked it out. I really can't think of it. I mean, we've all had that moment where we realize we forgot to record the podcast episode, or we flubbed the line, or we said something we shouldn't have, or you know, those kind of things. And your face gets red for a second, and you move on.
Right.
Funny thing that's happened to me live. Oh, I'll tell you one. I went to theater with my friend, my best friend, who I've mentioned several times. He was the uh-huh. guy who was the band leader at my wedding. He was the guy who ran that theater that I was telling you about. He and I and his dad went out to a show one of the theaters here in Los Angeles, and it was a fun show. And we were seated in like the first or second row of the theater. And this was a show where they brought people up on stage and did audience participation. I didn't know that when we got the seats.
Yikes.
And they brought me up on the stage and they put on this little costume and they made me a part of this sketch. Where, I mean, I was just mortified. I mean, I tried not to go up on stage. I was doing, I'm too shy. Uh-huh. That's not me, that kind of thing. I finally went up, and as I got up, my friend Bob said, just go for it, man. And so I got up and they put this costume on me, and I'm like having a hard time. It was a pantomime show. Is that the other part of it? So we were not speaking, but they were whispering to us on stage. And they made me do this colossally embarrassing. I had to go out on, I was the, like the cameraman in a film set was the scene, the scenario we were playing out. And they made me get up there and, you know, hike my pants up and scratch my butt and a bunch of just really things I would never do in front of people in public.
Those horribly uncomfortable things.
And something snapped and I finally just had to go, okay, it's for the audience. It's not for me. It's not, you know, and I hammed it up and got big laughs and it was fun and ultimately, you know, worked out fine. And it's not like anybody ever came and talked to me about it beyond more than a day after. But in the moment, I was mortified.
Yeah. I love that. Like you said, you had that moment where you're like, okay, let's just roll with the punches and have fun here. And it sounds like you really did.
Well, you know, what's done is done. I'm already up here. I can't get down without being more embarrassed about being a coward about it. Right. And so I think when these things happen to us, whatever it is, anything bad or embarrassing, you don't have a choice. Like I said, when you're going through hell, keep going.
Yeah.
Not that that was hell, but you know,
it was uncomfortable.
But be in the moment and live it and then just move on. Where's the lesson? And be grateful.
Tell me something that you're most proud of.
My family, my children, my beautiful wife and the life we built together. I am not a day goes by that I don't feel overjoyed at what we've built together and where we're going and the wonderful people that we've made, these kids. Right now they're 10, 13, and 15. And wonderful, wonderful kids. And we've all got our stuff, of course. But so I'm very proud of that. And I'm very proud of the build business that I've built, helping people, creatives, and you know, not just as a lawyer service for hire kind of thing, but I also have an online course and a bunch of online templates and things like that that really I try to make it accessible. So if you need to get this legal stuff taken care of, and I submit that everybody does, there's a way. It's accessible for anybody on any budget. And that's what I've really tried to create.
Well, and that's how you and I met, because I use your guest release form, which thank you, you also signed, so that I can use this content and promote what I do and all the other things that I need to have in place to protect myself. So, you know, I thank you for that, because it is a big deal, because if most people starting out don't have a big, huge budget, you know, we're bootstrapping this, we're paying for these things ourselves. And to Gordon, if I hired you, would it cost me like $25 an hour?
It would cost you considerably more than $25 an hour.
Considerably more. Yeah. Yes. So I appreciate that you do have what podcasters need to get started. And then you do offer, instead of me hiring you, I know that I could go to your website and I could pay for some of the books and some of the material that you've created. And that's something that's affordable. So I appreciate, I really can't say that enough. I appreciate the resources that you provide for people who are wanting to try out, but don't have a huge budget to hire an attorney, to hire the producer, to hire this, to hire that, that just need to get started and see if it's something that they truly are passionate or even interested in.
Right. You know, really about something at every level for the, you know, there's free information. I've got a YouTube channel, I've got podcasts, I've got some free forms and templates available. But then, you know, as you escalate and take things up a level in your business, in your life, you can, I've got something for you along every step of the way. And that's really service of my mission: help creative people get their message out, achieve influence and inspiration, and have an impact, and hopefully make some income.
So I usually wait till the end to ask this, but if somebody's listening and they think, "Oh my gosh, I need to find that information. I need to talk to this guy," where can they find you? How can they get in touch with Gordon Firemark?
Well, I'm fortunate to have a distinctive name, aren't I? So GordonFiremark.com is probably the best place to start looking. Firemark.com is much just more the law firm website. But GordonFiremark.com is sort of a hub for a lot of the things that I do. And of course, on social media, GFiremark, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, a little bit of Instagram, those kind of things. But I'm an old guy. Facebook and LinkedIn are the big ones for me.
So. I feel you. And I will have in our show notes how to find you. So if people forget that, they can go back to the show notes and I'll have that in there. So I'm curious, you've got a great name. Is that your real name? Or is that just like, it's a great name, people will remember it?
I wish I could say I was clever enough to make up this name. No, this is the name I was born with. It was a cross to bear when I was a kid. I got made fun of a lot, lots of teasing variations. Yeah, you know, the way kids are. Kids are cool. But no, as an adult, I recognize. And it is a very distinctive name because my grandfathers and my father and I are really the only, and now my sons are the only male Firemarks there are. So we are the ones who continue the name. We think the name was invented when my great, I don't remember how many greats in their grandfather emigrated from what's now part of what's Ukraine. And we don't know what the name was before. So
interesting. So I just have to share, I sort of have one of those last names too. If you look at it, you're not going to guess how to say it, but it's Tagey. And if there's another Tagey that you see, if you see that last name, they are family. Mm-hmm. We had a grandparent somewhere who Americanized the name. and it was spelled differently. I don't remember exactly how, but of Hungarian origin. So it's really interesting to learn that history about yourself, isn't it?
Yeah, sure is. My dad tried to do a family tree and sort of hit the roadblock at that moment of emigration. So
interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. So can you tell me who has been the most influential person in your life, and do they know it?
My dad. And I think he knew it. He passed away about 25 years ago, 25 okay. years. No, 23, 24. Anyway, I think he knew how influential he was. His is the voice that I hear in my head every single day, either encouraging or sometimes a what are you thinking kind of a message. Mm-hmm. And his is the voice I hear coming out of my own mouth when I talk to my kids. At least I aspire that it's his voice and his tone of understanding and empathy and good, just giving good counsel without judging. I think that's really, mm-hmm. yeah.
I can see that's really important to you. Yeah.
I have a bit more of a temper than he did, and I try to keep that in check, but he was a good guy.
Yeah. What was his name?
Hugh. And he was a Hugh physician. Fireman. He was also a helper, a healer. Yeah.
What kind of physician was he?
He was a neurologist with a subspecialty in pharmacology and a crazy smart guy.
The apple doesn't fall far, does it?
I'm the black sheep of the family because I left the healthcare field and went into law.
Oh, so you've got some siblings in healthcare?
My sisters are both psychologists. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Well, I think he would be proud of you and the work that you're doing, because you're definitely a helper. Yeah. And I appreciate that. And it would be so interesting. Wouldn't it be interesting to hear his take on what you're doing right now?
Yeah. I look forward to when it comes true.
But not anywhere in the near future.
Right. Well, who knows? Maybe I'll go to a seance or something.
Oh, maybe. Oh, gosh. You'll have to tell me about that. I'd be too scared to attend something like that. I am a big baby. Ghosts scare me.
I don't know if I really believe in an afterlife that way. But
I'm not taking any chances. I'm going to be nice to them all.
There you go. Good.
I want to ask you a little bit more about what you do and how it relates to the everyday person who I go out and I make a little video of myself and I capture somebody in the background. Mm-hmm. Do I need to be concerned about that?
If you're out in public, generally speaking, no. As long as you're not using the video that you make or the photo that you make for a commercial purpose, that is to sell a product or promote a transaction of some sort. But you just posting, hey, look what happened to me on YouTube is perfectly fine. And, doesn't infringe. Well, people have a right of privacy, but if they're out in public, they don't have privacy. They don't expect privacy. So that's really the
So if I'm an influencer or even myself and I'm making a video for Productive Passions and somebody happens to walk by, I need to be careful about that?
Not particularly so, because again, unless you are saying, hey, I'm carrying this Prada handbag and you should buy one too, that's a sales pitch, an ad. But just the influencer thing is a little, did they get paid to carry the thing around? If so, they should be careful about that. But if you're just promoting your podcast, you do have rights of free speech, and that's really the flip side of this privacy thing. So we draw the line at the public-private line. So there are places that are sort of in between. What if you're in a mall? What if you're in a football stadium?
Right.
And the rules tend to bend a little bit in one direction or the other. But the general rule, if you're in a public place, a place of public accommodation is the way the law says it, you don't have an expectation of privacy if you're photographed or seen there any more than if your wife saw you there with your girlfriend. Are you going to, blame the place or?
Yikes.
You don't have a wife or a girlfriend, do you?
I do not. What's your take on AI and intellectual property?
This is really the bleeding edge of the intellectual property law right now. We don't know what the outcomes are going to be. It seems right now that there's two sides to this. One side is saying, well, if I create something, use AI, I own it, don't I? And the courts and the law seem to be saying, no, nobody owns it. You can't claim copyright protection or patent protection for things that were not generated by a human. So then we get into splitting hairs about, well, how much was human? How much was original? You know, because the threshold for copyright protection is originality. Well, if a machine made it, you can't really claim original thought and those kinds. So that's what I've got, except in China, where they decided that you can own it.
Oh, interesting.
So that's one side of the intellectual property coin that we're sort of looking at right now. The other side is, well, where did these machines get all the data that they base their output on? And is their output substantially similar to something somebody had previously created and claims ownership of? So right now, you might have heard the New York Times is suing the AI companies over that question. Hey, you basically trained these machines by feeding them all of the New York Times as far back as the material's been available. So when you ask it a question, you're getting stuff that came from the New York Times.
Interesting.
We think that's infringement, and that and they should have been paid for it is the extension of that. And then the flip side is the output too similar? And there have been a few cases that showed that, hey, if I ask it the right question, the output reads almost verbatim.
So what does Joe Q Public need to know when they go to a website, an AI generating web content generating website, and then use it in a speech, use it on as their content? What should we be thinking about?
Well, I think if you're using it to create something that you are then putting out as your own, there's probably not a big concern unless you're going to try to claim ownership and monetization of that thing, because someone else who comes along and has access to that same information can use it also.
And that's a lot of people are doing that. A lot of people are using AI to create stuff and put their name on it.
Yeah. And, you know, honestly, there'll be those situations. Well, how do you know whether this is AI, or if they've announced, hey, this is an entirely AI written novel? Well, they're telling the world, I don't own it. Go ahead and copy it if you want. But most people aren't going to be doing that. Most people are going to be deceiving the world by telling us it came from them. AI is a tool, you know, same as Photoshop is a tool or those kinds of things. At least that's how I think of it. And so I think it's okay to use these tools, but I think that as long as the origination is with us, and we put our own stamp on things. The other caution I would say is we have to be really aware that the machines are not always truthful. The computer scientists call it hallucinating. They say the machine hallucinates sometimes. There have been a few lawyers who've actually gotten in trouble because they used ChatGPT or these tools to file a brief with the court.
I heard about that.
And that's some of the cases that were cited in the brief were cases that were completely fabricated. They didn't exist. When the judge or the clerk went looking for that case to verify that it said what the lawyer said it said, they couldn't find the case.
Oh my gosh.
And that got those lawyers in some pretty steep trouble.
So, yeah. So it'd be interesting to hear your sister's take on hallucinating machines.
And my dad, right? The neurologist, the hallucination, that would have been, and drugs, that would have definitely been his conversational topic. My sisters would have good, interesting thoughts too. Sure.
Maybe a whole new area of practice.
I think there's a genre of science fiction coming where the machines are hallucinating and taking humans along for a ride, and it becomes a fun ride or a who knows what.
Gordon, is there an author in you?
Not a fiction author. I mean, I'm happy to write about what I know.
Okay.
But yeah, I don't see myself writing any fiction.
That could be absolutely fascinating for it. Yep. What are three things you absolutely had to do to get where you are now?
Three things I absolutely had to do. One, the schooling. Had to get the education. Mm-hmm. And you know, continue it all the way to law school and beyond. I think I had to develop a kind of confidence and self-assuredness.
And how did you get that?
That's a great question. I think some of it was inherent in me from a very young age. I mean, when I told my parents I was going to go to law school, they sort of smacked their heads and said, of course. Because I was the kid who would argue a point at the dinner table, even with no facts to back it up, you know, and I would argue it confidently, like sounding like I knew what I was talking about, and sometimes persuade them of the wrong position.
Of course he's going to be an attorney.
Right. So it's like a light bulb went on. But, you know, then I talked about the insecurities as well. I think that recognizing them as insecurities is part of it, and being able to look at the actual accomplishments and say, mm-hmm. okay, I got this. Some of it is just facing the fear and the uncertainty and doing it anyway. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some truth to the notion of fake it till you make it a little bit. Not so much fake it till you make it, but you know what it is? A lot of us go through life and we say, I'm going to be this kind of a person when I have these things so that I can do that, do whatever it is. And I think that you have to be the person who has those things and does those things first.
I can remember thinking, I will be happy when I get accepted to the University of Florida. Got accepted to the University of Florida. Get there. It's very stressful. I will be happy when I pass that neuroanatomy test. I will be happy when I get through with these internships. I will be, and one day I caught myself. And it was because somebody had written on the whiteboard, happiness is a journey, not a destination. And again, I don't know who said that originally. It's been re-said so many times. And I realized that I was making my happiness a destination mm-hmm. when it should be the journey, because I'm going to do this journey, if I'm lucky, for a really long time. Yeah. And wait, when am I going to be happy? When I'm dead and can't appreciate it? Right. So in that moment, I decided it's the journey that I need to be happy on. And I've had to remind myself that over and over again, because it's human nature to say, oh, I'll be so happy when I get this, or when this is over, when that is. But really understanding it's the journey. It's not that next accomplishment, although we can certainly be proud of that. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of added a little something to it, and I think other people have also. Happiness is a journey, not a destination. And enjoy the ride. Because mm-hmm. otherwise, it's a really long ride to be like waiting for.
Yeah. I think that's the same formulation works for the notion of success. You know, getting there is the real job is getting there. I think you have to embody the person that you want to be first, so you can have the things that that person has mm-hmm. and do the things that that person accomplishes.
I also love, you know, I said there's places I want to rewind. Sure, there's another one. So you just said two things that I really like too. Facing fear and uncertainty mm-hmm. and doing it anyway. There's not a person that I've talked to so far that was like, I'm unafraid. I'm just going to go and everything's going to be perfect. People have said, I was really afraid. I wasn't sure how this was going to end. I wasn't sure what people were going to think of me, all of these things. But the one thing you all have in common, you did it anyway.
Yeah.
Despite naysayers, despite the circumstances, which sometimes have been really tough.
Yeah.
The people I've talked to have done it anyway.
That's true. You know, you mentioned naysayers. I just want to mention, I think that most of us are the naysayers are in here. Most of us are doing it to ourselves.
And if people can't see what Gordon's doing, he's pointing to his head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most of us are our own worst enemies in that regard. Mm. The naysayer comes from within. And sometimes, as I said earlier, is my dad's voice, my parents' voice, you know, there are people who will discourage us from taking a big risk or something like that. It's not because they don't want us to succeed. It's because they're afraid or they're concerned about us being hurt. And, you know, that's true. You know, the old saying, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Every journey begins with a single step. And unless you take that step, you never get anywhere. You know, the other analogy, I go to these trite analogies all the time. Can you imagine if babies were afraid to learn to walk? They would never take their first step. They'd never pull themselves up on the ottoman or the side of the couch or whatever. And they would never try because, oh my God, I'll fall.
Right.
Somewhere along the line in our lives, we grow up and we learn, oh, falling bad. I better not do this anymore. And to some extent, that's self-preservation, but taking risks is inherent. And being bold in our action is how you accomplish the great things that we aspire to. And part of that, again, the education, we're talking about that, being prepared and knowing how to address the things that some maybe potential consequences of those bold actions is part of knowing you're ready to do them, feeling comfortable enough to face the fear and do it anyway.
Exactly. It's okay to be afraid, but not to let that hold you back.
I mean, if you're riding in an airplane and you know it's going to crash and there's a parachute available and you've never looked at a parachute in your life before, are you going to just throw that thing on and jump? Or are you going to maybe look for instructions, right? Prepare yourself a little bit. You do what you can. Or are you going to just ride the plane to the ground because I don't know how to use this thing?
Well, and so there are people, I don't want to say that would ride the plane to the ground, but get frozen in fear. And that's one of the things I hear frequently is Christy, I'm just stuck.
Yep.
So what would you tell somebody listening to this who wanted to do something, but felt stuck?
One thing I always ask is, what is really the worst thing that could happen? Are you going to crash into the side of a mountain in this airplane?
Gordon, I'm going to look foolish.
So?
Gordon, I'm going to fail in front of a lot of people.
Is anyone going to reach through the screen and punch you in the face? Is anybody going to strangle you because you looked foolish? Is anybody going to die because you looked foolish? Is it going to hurt someone else? That's maybe a reason right there.
Sure.
But the real reality of what's the consequence. And I think as people start to get, okay, looking foolish, is that so bad? I mean, hey, I got up on that stage and scratched my butt in front of 1,000 people in the theater, you know? And the next day I was still the same person. Actually a little different because I'd done that, right? There's a lesson here. Is it worth learning the lesson? The fear is there. Yes, it's real. It's there to protect you. But is it really protecting you from something you need to be afraid of? I think you just have to keep asking, why am I scared? What's the real consequence? How bad could it be? And the flip side is, how bad could it be if I don't do this thing? Because ultimately, you're making a choice.
Right.
So yes, I know I should get up on that stage and speak in front of people, but I'm afraid I'll look foolish. Well, if I don't get up on that stage in front of people, what is the bad consequence there? I never achieve the kind of impact or influence that I want to have. Which is more important? And there's another saying, going another trite saying, I think this one's Jim Rohn, that if you have something that, in this case it was customers, but if you have something that people will benefit from, you owe it to them to share it with them or offer it to them for sale. Keeping it to yourself is selfish.
Sharing your talent with the world.
Your knowledge, your information, your talent, your impact, your influence, your idea, whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So get up and do that TED talk or jump out of that airplane or whatever it is. You know, it's never really as bad as your mind makes it.
I couldn't agree with you more. So, Gordon Firemark, what is next for you?
What is next for me? I am embarrassed to say I don't have a plan. right now, it's about helping as many people in the creative arenas do their thing and get their message out and achieve their impact. And for me, that their impact is my impact. You know, it's cascading. And I don't know if I ever really will want to retire, because this kind of helping people is so fulfilling. Maybe more.
It sounds like you do know
content creation. So what's next is more.
Yeah. It sounds like, yeah, you know exactly. You want to reach more people and help more people? I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like that's kind of what you said.
Yeah, I don't see a radical shift in direction or change in what I do so much as just doing it a little better, a little more every day. You know, incremental improvement. So when I go back to that insecurity about, am I enough? Am I doing enough? Am I, you know, I guess that's through the drive to just do every day a little something extra, a little something different to make the change happen and the growth happen. So I guess that.
Well, Gordon, I deeply appreciate the time you spent with us today. We'll have your information in the show notes if anybody wants to reach out to you. And I look forward to learning more from you and following you and all the cool things that you're doing. I really appreciate the work that you're doing for people like myself who really need the guidance to protect ourselves, protect our content and our stories.
Well, thank you, Christy. This has been a really rewarding conversation. I've learned a lot about myself, and I've gotten a lot out of being here. So thank you for having me. I'm grateful.
Thank you.